accession number 220-66 Reel 3.
Edna Preston, Reel 3. Yes, you were saying in your room there would be 20 women. What was the sort of proportion of women to men working in your sort of area?
Oh, it's all women. It was all women, yes, all girls together.
Was this mainly because of the war, or would most of the secretaries
Well, most secretaries would have been women. I don't think in those days we'd have ever heard of a man being a secretary. No, not a male secretary. I'd never heard of anybody. That was strange, you saying that, wasn't it? Because I never realised that. But we were all women in there. We were all about the same age. Youngish women, we were all together, and they'd all been there from the beginning of the war, you see, and I wondered how they'd got there, but they'd got there through going to their labour exchanges and being called up and sent to the Foreign Office.
And the 20 of you in your room that you've described so well, you would have all been doing the same job, would you?
Yes, we all got different. They were coming through all the time, masses and masses and masses. Just went out to the front and asked Vera, who was our supervisor, asked Vera to give us some work, and she would give us another one, come back and do it, give it to the girls from the Ronio department, and then come back and pick another one up. We were busy all the time, all the time.
And the Ronio, would that have been, what was the Ronio?
The Ronio machines, you know, the duplicating machines, the big duplicating machines. They were electric then. I think they were electric ones then. I know they had hand ones as well, but they had to take off so many copies of each because we had to type them all on stencils, big stencils, you see. Everything was put on a stencil, and then you would do some 30 copies of some, 20 copies of other things, 12 copies, whichever department it was going to.
And you were saying the original you had to burn.
Oh yes, the originals for Mr. Churchill. We had to burn all the carbons and everything.
Just for him.
Yes,
just
yes.
For him.
But they were all destroyed. All the other things were all the other big stencils were all.
Had you been vetted very much for security for this job? Did they check up on your background? Do you know?
I don't know. I expect they did. I expect they did. Unbeknown to me, I think they must have done before I actually started in there. Because I know I had to sign these papers, various papers and things.
And would you have been searched ever, going in or coming out to the Foreign Office?
No. No. No, we weren't in those days. Yeah. There were a couple of men on the door when we went in, but of course we knew them. We had to have a pass to go in, but you had a pass to say who you were. But then the men got to know us after a while. They knew who they were letting in and letting out. Yeah.
How about the Allies? Did you have any contact with Poles or Czechs or Norwegians?
No. I only came in contact with the Czechs when I was in the Land Army. We had the Czech soldiers, the Czech army, we had a band of Czech soldiers come and work on the farm with us. And we had one, Vladimir Kish, who was the officer in charge, couldn't speak any English, so I taught him English while we were picking potatoes and shelling peas and things. I would teach Vladimir English.
These would have been prisoners of war, would they?
No, Vladimir had made his way over here. And I think these men had sort of come over various ways and come to England and formed themselves into this band. Because after all, they did eventually form themselves into an army of their own, didn't they, the Czechs? But they were lovely fellows. We also had Italian prisoners working on our farm as well. And I didn't like them very much because we were riddling potatoes. We had a big riddling machine where it used to grade the potatoes, and they tied my foot to the machine and then called me when I fell over, and I didn't like that very much. But what I didn't like was my boss used to buy them cigarettes every day, but never, I used to say to him, you buy them cigarettes, where's mine? Where are our other boys? Because I did smoke at the time. don't buy us all cigarettes, it's you buy the Italian prisoner. But his name was Tacky, and I always wonder whether there wasn't something Italian about that.
And that was a farmer boss, obviously.
That was my boss in Huntingdon, yes.
Huntingdon,
in Jeffrey, yes.
Yes,
in Witten. Yes, right. Jeffrey Tacky.
Yeah. So
he's dead now, poor man.
Yes, Potsdam, of course, came after VE Day. Do you remember the day war ended? You were saying how you knew it was going to.
Oh yes, I knew it was going to, but I wasn't at work that day. I missed it. I wish I'd have been at work, because I would have seen Mr. Churchill coming out of his house and being lifted above heads, waving his hand and doing this instead, or doing his two fingers to everybody. And smiling and smoking his cigar. I wish I'd seen that, but I didn't see any of that. But then somebody told me I would never have got to the office because the crowds were so many there that they wouldn't probably have got in, you see.
So what did you do on VE Day? Did you have any sort of
we didn't
celebrations?
We did at home. We had wonderful VE parties, street parties. Wonderful street parties. Now, my young brother Colin was a music fanatic. He plays the piano, he plays all sorts of musical instruments, and he had a lot of friends who fixed up music from our house, speakers on all the lampposts, and we had a ball all down, up and down the road, dances, and all the people came out in their front gardens and gave food, and we had a most wonderful party. I think the mayor came round to us and stood on our steps and gave a little speech, and we had a wonderful street party, and all this music, the dance music. I remember foxtrotting up and down the road with my brother-in-law, and he was teaching me the foxtrot.
Yes, I was going to ask you, about what your social life had been during the war, Edna. Did you go out? You said you went to the pictures with boyfriends.
Oh yes, went to the cinema. Well, we used to go to the church, because everything we did was associated around the church in the chapel in those days, and there was lots of things going on at the chapel. You know, we used to have evenings, club evenings and girls' club evenings and all that sort of thing. And we used to play tennis. I used to play tennis quite a lot in the summer. I tried roller skating, but I wasn't very good at that. But there were things to do. I had lots of friends through the church. I was in a netball team up until I was 18. We won lots of medals too. That was through the church. So that I had all those girls in the netball team. We used to go out Saturdays playing, you see, all around everywhere. So that was another thing that we did, which was fun.
Did the Americans make much impact?
Only when I was out in Berlin.
That not was the in, only. Not in London.
Oh yes, I came into contact with them in the Land Army, because they were stationed up there near Huntingdon. They were stationed, and one or two of them came round. Used to drink in our little local pubs and that. We met them there. But then all the RAF used to come down from Witten down to our little pubs as well. So I used to meet a lot of the boys there. And they didn't like the Americans, of course. No, no.
Did you?
Well, I didn't mind them at all. I thought, you know, I wasn't. I liked them. The ones that I met in Berlin, they were all officers we met out there, you see. They were quite nice. They were quite nice, the ones that we met in Berlin.
Well, did they seem very different, though, when you saw them in Cambridge?
Well, they always seemed quite friendly. They were quite friendly. But you see, they used to go around saying this whole thing about nylons and chocolate and would you like chocolate and all the rest of it. And that's what our boys hated them, didn't they? Especially the soldiers. They really didn't like them at all. Coming over with their women, and that's why my husband never liked me to be telling him stories about Berlin if I was any of the Americans were involved in it. Oh no, he thought they were disgusting people. It was funny that, because they were only friendly, and they're more outgoing. They were much more outgoing than our boys, really. But of course, I was associated with the RAF more in Witten and Huntingdon, which was very sad because I used to watch the planes going out. You know, they were Lancaster bombers, and you'd count the Lancaster bombers going out, and then you count the bombers coming back. You know, and you think, whose turn is it this time? It was all very sad. So you got to know the lots of the pilots and the air, the gunners and the rear gunners. You could see the rear gunners as the planes went up, they'd wave to us. Yes. Never knew whether they were coming back or not. That was a tragedy.
Did you think, you know, sort of the relations between men and women in the war, did that ease up compared to the earlier situation? Was it easier to sort of have boyfriends or sort of relations with men?
Well, I always found it was very easy. I always had boyfriends. Friends. I seemed to get on with men quite well. Always had relationships. I mean, and the sad thing was I had a boyfriend, Michael Rowe, who went out to Pensacola, Florida for training, and he came back as a pilot. And he did two tours of ops in the Middle East. And he came all the way back to England, and there was fog over the airfield, and he crashed and killed. And at the same time as that, he was 21 years old. My cousin John was a lieutenant in the Royal Engineers. He'd been to Cambridge. He was a brilliant boy. He was in the orchestra at Kingston, where he lived. He played musical instrument. He was a really clever boy. He went out to North Africa, was killed by a sniper, and he was 21. Then there was the other boy. There were three of them. Then there was Alan Dundas. He was in the Fleet Air Arm, and he crashed over the Wash. And he was killed. Now, those three lives, so they were very clever boys. They all went to Tiffin's at Kingston, which is a very nice school at Kingston, very posh grammar school. They were all terribly clever. Michael got a junior BSc, and John, they were all, and those three boys, all within the same year, they were all killed, the three of them.
That must have been very sad. There must have been a lot of sadness.
That was very, very sad, because I had a letter from John, my cousin John, and he said, you'd be celebrating our birthdays. He wrote it in pencil because he was writing it in his tent by a candlelight, he said. And he said, don't celebrate your birthday till I come home. And I got the letter after he died. He was killed on my birthday. And that was sad because I loved him. I loved John. He was about my age and we got on so well together. And it was Michael, he was his friend, and Alan was John's brother, his wife's brother-in-law was Alan Dundas. So the three of them, they all knew each other, those three boys, you see. Because I went to my cousin's, I was bridesmaid at my cousin's wedding, and Alan Dundas was my usher. He was my partner at that wedding. And when you think, those three young, lovely young men at 21 years of age, it's very sad. I remember walking along Oxford Street when Michael got his sergeant stripes up and his wings, and I said, don't put your overcoat on to cover your wings. And I walked proudly down Oxford Street with him, you know, in his uniform and his bright white wings. Yeah, and then he got killed. Very sad.
Now, I was wondering if there was, you know, this might not have applied to your own situation, but if you knew anything about it, if there was a sort of freer attitude developed to sort of sexual relations because of the war and people being killed.
Yes. I don't know. Because, I mean, nowadays, all this sexual sex that you get thrown at you makes me sick. In those days, it was never discussed. I mean, even the only thing that I ever got close to was in the Air Force were a couple of WAFs that were known as camp blankets. Now, I only ever heard that those two. So that the boys on the Air Force, if they wanted a relationship with anybody, they would go to these girls. But to us, we thought that was dreadful. We thought that was awful. And I mean, we used to go into these little pubs with masses of airmen, but there was never any sexual discussions or none of that at all. Not like you see all these girls now in their mini skirts and their topless and flashing around with them. There was nothing like that at all. Nothing. I met up with loads and loads and loads and loads of fellows, but there was never sex included in any of that. You'd go to dances with them. I used to ride my bike through the thicket and go off dancing, and an airman would see me home and say, cheerio then, see you tomorrow, and off he'd go. You know? I dare say it went on, but it was all undercover. It wasn't out in the open like it is now. It's brazen now, isn't it? Right? I think so.
Would have been May 45. Did you still continue at the Foreign Office?
Oh,
was
yes.
There still, how oh, did yes. your work change then?
Well, it didn't change at all. It went on exactly the same. We still had all this work coming in,
and it was the
same sort of work. Yes, it came in. It always came in encoded, and then it was decoded in the cipher office, and then brought through to us, and then we typed it. Yeah. Oh, yes. It was still. It was very, very busy, actually, because of the war ending and the countries sort of negotiating things, Russia and America and all trying to sort things out and various meetings that were going on. And then, of course, this conference came up for Potsdam. And I can't remember how we were chosen. I think our supervisor picked us out and said, would we like to go? And, of course, I was asked, and I said, oh, yes, please. So I think it was six or eight of us went. I can't remember the names. I remember Nikki, a Canadian girl, came with us, and Rosina came with us. And the thing was, my mother never had me vaccinated. She didn't believe in it. It was rather strange in those days. People didn't believe in vaccinations. And my mother didn't. So I had to go along to Millbank, to the military hospital, and be vaccinated. And I had an awful arm. Oh, terrible arm. And I mean, even when I got on the plane to go out to Potsdam, it was still very, very sore. But still, I got it done. We had to go along and have all our injections done. And at the military college in Millbank. That's where the Queen Mother goes, you know. And we got all our papers drawn up and everything, and flew off in Dakotas. And the wings went up and down. You sort of flew like a bird.
Where did you fly from?
Do you know, I can't remember. I remember flying back from Gatow, but I can't remember where we flew from. I just can't remember that at all. Isn't it strange? I've been trying to think about where we're going, and I can't even remember it at all. I remember Dakotas, because I remember the flapping wings, and we sort of sat on boxes and things. I don't think we had proper. It wasn't an aeroplane like seats, proper seats and things in it.
Did you take your equipment with you?
We didn't take it. We only took a case with us for ourselves. Everything was sorted out and arranged. Because we actually were staying in Babelsberg, which was the film community lived in Babelsberg. You know, all the film stars all lived in around a most beautiful lake, beautiful surroundings. It was a lovely, lovely place that we went to, just outside Berlin, at Babelsberg.
And you landed at Gatow,
yes,
you?
Yes, mm. we, yes.
What was that like, you know, the Gatow?
Oh, well, everything was flattened, you see. Berlin, it was tragic when you saw Berlin. I mean, all the buildings were down, and if you remember the underground, he flooded the underground, Hitler did. And you could see that we passed the underground and the water was up to a level. So that all the bodies were still down there that had gone down to shelter. They were all flooded. I couldn't... The poor people, we all felt terribly sorry for the people. They all looked so poorly and bedraggled and I mean, everywhere was... The buildings were all down, fallen down. It was awful.
So getting from Gatow to Potsdam...
We all went in coaches and things into Babelsberg, where we stayed. And we were in a big house. We stayed in the house, and our offices were on the sort of ground floor, our offices were. And we had Marines guarding us. The Marines were in the basement. They were our guardian angels, looked after us while we were there. But it was very nice. It was sort of all cobbles everywhere, cobbles. And Mr. Churchill lived just along the road from us. And, of course, he had sentries marching up and down, didn't he, outside his house. And they made such a clatter with their boots on the cobbles, he asked them all to wear plimsolls. Which they did. Then he couldn't hear them, you see. I bet they kept him awake at night. And, you see, we lived in sectors. The British had a sector. The Americans were sort of opposite us. And then the Russians were at the end, so that we were in three sectors. And we were told that if we were to wander about, if we wanted to go for a walk, we weren't allowed to go very far. As long as we carried a special pass with us, which showed the flags of the Union Jack, the Stars and Stripes, and the red flag, as long as we showed the Russian police, the police or the officers in the army, showed them that pass and they saw the red flag, they would let us through. They knew that we were okay. So, of course, we carried that pass with us all the time. And we still worked shift hours, the same as we had in... We still worked our shift hours. But we had to be very careful. We weren't allowed to drink water there. All our water... was brought in big canisters from London. Everything was flown out for our needs, and we even to clean our teeth, we had to get our water. We weren't allowed to use the water in because it was all contaminated. Because this big lake was beautiful, but it was full of bodies that had been thrown in, you see. So it was awfully sad. We'd taken over all these lovely houses of these film stars, and we lived in our house, and then we had to go across to a mess. We all had a mess where we used to go and have our meals. And we had chefs from the Savoy that used to come and do all our cooking. And so we had wonderful menus. We were very well looked after. And we sort of had people to look after us all the time there. But... the work was the same, really. See, that we did out there. The work we did our typing just the same, and we did our duties just the same as we would have done in England.
And what sort of messages were you dealing with there, though?
Well, messages from between that there were discussions. The discussions that the three had, they were the messages that we would do between the three representatives. I mean, we went out there, didn't we? We went out with Mr. Churchill. And came back with Mr. Attlee, which I could never understand. Because Mr. Churchill had been dealing with all these things wonderfully well. And then they had an election in England. And back had to come poor Anthony Eden and Mr. Churchill. And out had to come Mr. Bevan and Mr. Attlee. And I thought, well, I hope they know what's going on. Because how can you change horses in the middle of a stream? I could never understand that, really. Oh, that seemed very strange to me. Mr. Bevan just took over from Mr. Anthony Eden. But the sectors that we wasn't very much entertaining or anything like that you could do, but the Americans used to entertain us. And the thing, one of the things that amused me was our sector was on one side of a road and the American sector was over the other side of the road. And at night, they used to have to light the lamps in this particular street. So down would come the army, pop, 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 down the road, halt, up went the pole, light the light, down it came, forward march, and off to went to the next lamppost. When it came to the Americans lighting their side of the street, down came a jeep with an American sitting on the bonnet with a stick, and he'd say, "Stop here," and up went the pole, and light the light, and off he went to the next one. And you know, that amused us girls more than anything, the difference in the way it was done, you know, between the British and the Americans. And then one evening we were out walking and we saw a soldier, British soldier. So we stopped to have a chat with him. We asked him, you know, we said that we were from England. He wanted to know how England was getting on, and we were telling him, and we asked him about his girlfriend and all the rest of it. And along suddenly came an officer down the road with a little stick under his arm, called this soldier across the road. And the soldier said something to him. Then he brought him across. Well, I didn't know who this officer was at the time. I should have done, but I didn't. Brought him across, and he said, "Hello, girls, and what are you doing here?" We said, "Well, we're in the British delegation, and we're in the communications section, etc." "Oh, very, very good, girls," he said. "Well, I hope you enjoy your stay here, and you're not kept too busy." And off he went. And this soldier saluted, you know. Attention, I said to this soldier, "Who's he then?" He said, "Field Marshal Alexander." So I said, "Oh," I said, "that's funny, I didn't recognise," because it was only Montgomery. I knew Field Marshal Montgomery. I'd seen him as well in Berlin. But I'd not seen Field Marshal, but he had a polished Sam Brown, you know, and he said he'd called this soldier across and told him not to fraternise with the German women. And this soldier said, "Excuse me, sir, but these are not German women. They're English from the British delegation." And he said, "Oh, my goodness, I must come across and apologise," which he did. So he came across and just said hello to us. See, because there was no fraternising allowed out there by these, by the army, they weren't. But Field Marshal Montgomery came in with his boys, and I think he stayed in a caravan. And all these boys were under canvas, but all the Americans were all in great houses, you know, and they used to send us over trays of ice cream and cakes and all sorts of stuff. The Americans used to whip it across to us, although, as I say, we were well cared for there, very well cared for, looked after, especially in the mess. But all the you remember when the Belsen, those terrible, they were all the officers that had gone in, what do they call them? They went in to film all this. They were a special section of the army, aren't they, that do all this photography. And one evening we were in the bar and they all came in and they just come back from filming, and they showed us these films that they'd taken of the atrocities, the terrible things that they found when they'd gone into these camps. And we were all in tears, absolutely in tears. They got there were about three or four of these photographers there. They'd all dropped in. I think they were going to Potsdam, you see. They were going to be called into Potsdam to show them these pictures and everything. And we thought at the time, you know, the pictures of these poor bodies and shoes piled up and terrible graves, and oh, they were horrible pictures, you know. But they said they thought, you know, would we be interested in seeing them? Naturally we were, you know, we really wanted to. It was unbelievable, the things that were done. They showed us the gas chambers, they got photographs of those, and yes, awful things that happened.
Yes, you must have seen the sort of unedited films.
Yes, we saw the big, you know, the press take these big pictures, these big pictures that they take, masses of them, and then they're all sorted out, aren't they, and they picked out the ones that they want to show. And what we saw, these sort of unedited pictures, they were dreadful pictures.
And these would have been photographs rather than a film.
Photographs, yes. They were all photographs, still pictures. Dreadful pictures.
Yes. Had you had any idea up until then what had been going on in these camps?
Well, yes, you had an idea. You had an idea of things. But it's like anything. If you are told something, you form a picture in your own mind. But when you actually see a picture of bodies, you can't really visualise what that's like in your own mind. But when you see the pictures of it, it was frightening, really. And see all the clothes and all the thrown about and the shoes. And we were told that they did awful things with people's skin. They made lampshades out of skin and made us creep, really. It was dreadful, really dreadful. But what about these poor men that had to take the pictures? They were the ones we felt sorry for, really.
Yes, what